This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Friday afternoon, February 28th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. More restaurants are opening up in existing spaces. We'll discuss why in our next segment. But right now, today's inflation data is the economic headliner. We're joined by Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. The PCE index, the personal consumption expenditure figure, which is the Fed's preferred inflation measure, clocking in at 2.6% in January, a month-over-month increase of 0.3%. And it just goes to show you that inflation is cooling off still, gradually, bit by bit, Paul, but it's still over the target.
Yeah, still a little bit over the target. We think that the Fed would be, more inclined to cut rates again if we saw some further declines. It's been a little bit sticky lately, but that'll eventually come, we think. The real problem right now is that inflation just remains sticky, and we're starting to see some evidence of spending declines as well.
And, spending declines spell an entirely different problem for the economy. But from a fighting inflation standpoint, where does a decline in spending factor into the calculus, and what does that mean going forward?
Well, first we need to understand that this was the month of January that was being measured, and funny things happen in January. Things like Social Security cost of living increases pop in and make incomes look a little bit larger than they really would be on a sustained basis. And then you've got tariffs where people were expecting tariffs. Trump gets elected. They buy their cars in November and December, expecting tariffs on cars and car parts. And so you see a big decline in everything from cars to RVs in the month of January. So we're not inclined to read too much into this, but there was a decline in 7 of 8 goods categories across the personal consumptions for the month of January.
And this also lines up with the Fed's belief that they're in no hurry to lower interest rates anytime soon. I mean, I think the expectations game is 2 interest rate cuts before the end of 2025, and that's way down from where expectations were only 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah, that's right. We still think the economy is going to be solid this year. We think what we're looking at is some combination of weather and, as I mentioned, pulling forward purchases, anticipating tariffs from the Trump administration. So it's very difficult to read too much into these numbers here. We think the Fed is still pretty much confident that they can wait and see that inflation is sticky, not rising, and that goods and services spending will hold up well enough that they'll be able to cut rates maybe sometime later.
And then when it comes to what is the just kind of the overall feeling about the economy right now? Because obviously you can kind of chalk up January to, yes, it was cold. Yes, it was snowing in places that never saw snow before. And a major American city was under evacuation orders because of wildfires. But at what point does a one-off become a trend, and how do you assess that trend?
Yeah, we would be looking for a broader and more consistent pattern in the data, especially the employment data, which we're just not seeing yet. Important data coming up next Friday with the employment report for January. But right now, as we look back just a few months, employment gains and wage gains still look very much like, and even a little bit stronger than, the historical average going back 20 years. So we're not prepared to say that the economy is folding, not by any stretch of the imagination, but we do need to get past these couple of months where, as you pointed out, there were some unusual events.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis, thank you for joining us today.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Aspiring restaurateurs are skipping costly build-outs and opting for existing spaces, saving time and money while accelerating openings in a very competitive industry. Let's discuss the strategy with Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the Restaurant Coach in Chicago. Izzy, thank you for joining us today. And in a way, Izzy, I think all restaurant space is existing restaurant space, at least most of the time. But when a new one comes in to maybe a restaurant that had closed, they renovate the place. They put their own stamp on the space and line it up with their vision. But it sounds like these new restaurant owners are trying to just skip that expense and skip that effort and then just slapping a new name on an old space.
It is becoming more than a trend. Certainly all of our clients in the last year, every single one has skipped the idea of building a new restaurant, and all of them are on the search for a pre-existing building that once was a restaurant. And a lot of that is the cost of things like putting in ventilation or putting in all the plumbing for a bar. Since COVID, the price per square foot to build a restaurant has gone up $75 to $100 a square foot more, which means if you're building a general size restaurant that most people are used to going to, 3,500, 4,000 square feet, to do that build out now, if they were to do it from new, could cost them an extra $500,000. So best bet, find an existing place that could work for you.
And on top of that, I mean, are you really judged all that harshly by the restaurant public if you do just go into an existing space? I mean, if you have, let's say, a tapas establishment and you're opening it up and it's going into a place that used to be called, for lack of a better word, the Spaghetti Hut, it's not like people are going to go in there and say, oh, this is the Spaghetti Hut. I can't have tapas in here.
Well, you know, when I started my career many years ago, it was really... people thought it was a bad idea to go into an old restaurant because people associated that. But now with the economy, with the expense in the last 20 years, more and more restaurant companies are trending the other direction. But you hit on a key thing, which is when somebody takes over that new restaurant, it cannot be the Spaghetti Hut look inside. That owner does need to substantially make some interior design changes so that when you walk in, there's no reminder of the restaurant that was there previously. You want to really do the shock and awe and have people go, wow, this is beautiful. And as soon as they say that, they've forgotten all about the other restaurant.
Now, if you are opening a new restaurant in an old space, more often than not, are you going into a place that had been established for decades, or are you going into a place that the previous owner had, gave it the old college try, but it shut down after 2 years?
Yeah, the one that they give the old college try perhaps had been maybe two or three or four restaurants, none who could be successful. So, everybody's trying to tap into that right thing to get in there. And certainly taking over a space that had been around for 25 or 30 years is tough, a little tougher, because you really have to do the work to, remind people that, boy, that restaurant was here, but look how beautiful the new restaurant is. So, it's a little bit of both and what, one person can afford and how much they're willing to put in. But having the bones of an old restaurant, the ventilation, as I said, and plumbing and other things can save a substantial amount of capital as they build out.
Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the Restaurant Coach in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, Skype is logging off after a more than two-decade run.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Skype is logging off for good. The 21-year-old calling and messaging app will shut down on May 5th. Joining us with the details is Chris Stagg, Chief Technology Officer for the E Group in Chicago and the author of the new book, Elevate the Enterprise. You can find it at Amazon. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And way back when, Skype was one way to elevate the enterprise. It was one of the pioneers in messaging and phone calls over the internet, which in 2002, 2003, that voice over IP technology really was a novelty.
It was, but I think today, Rob, more people are going to be impacted by the high winds in Chicagoland than the demise of Skype, as most people have moved on from the platform. I think in some international calling situations, people still liked it. You could still make a call from the U.S. and get out to a telephone number in far-flung countries across the world to talk to someone on an old-school line. Those days, though, with cell phones and things like FaceTime have long been surpassed with other technologies.
I was going to say, the first thing that popped into my head when I heard that Microsoft was shutting down Skype was that Skype walked so Zoom can run, or Microsoft Teams, or FaceTime. I mean, it is kind of it's a name from the past, but when the history of this era of communication is written, chapter one is going to be Skype.
I highly agree with that. You know, they innovated in ways that others didn't before, and they made this whole home office, small office, and remote work possible by making protocols and technologies that others didn't. For instance, back in 2011, when they kicked this off, we had very little bandwidth to our homes, and they figured out how to write more efficient coders that took the voice that we communicated and video that we communicated and make it look very, very small on the internet and on our small DSL routers and other things, made it work. Others didn't. And that definitely set the stage for more enterprise-grade collaboration and video tools.
How many people, though, today, when they make what we believe to be a phone call, their voice actually goes through the fiber optic network or the old-fashioned phone company network versus voice over IP technology that Skype pioneered, or just simply relaying through cellular towers across the country or across the world?
Zero. Because even if you dial a 10-digit number or an international call, somewhere along the way, you're using voice over IP or the internet to traverse those calls. Big carriers like AT&T and British Telecom, they convert your traditional voice calls into the same kind of packets that Skype did 2011, years and years ago. So you're using that technology anytime you use a phone call, and of course, a video call as well.
And then when Skype came on the scene, how did this help businesses save money? Because you didn't have—I mean, I'm just thinking way back when. I'm of the generation that if you wanted to save money on long-distance phone calls, you had to call 1010-321 or whatever that number was to get the package rate. And now you try to explain that to somebody, you might as well say, like, well, I had to send a telegram by Western Union. Like, that is how old-fashioned that sentence sounds these days.
Sure is. And I'm in the telephony business as part of our role. And there's very few people that traditionally make telephone calls. In the business world, we're always meeting on conference calls. And it's a rare situation that people will actually make a traditional phone call at all these days for business or personal reasons. And I look at the next generation of what came after it, and they did lay the foundation for voice and video. But now you look at things like Snapchat that include the ability to look where a person is in the world and the ability to chat and to have a conference call at ease. These are just the kind of things that we've eventually moved to, but thanks to Skype as the foundation.
Chris Stagg, Chief Technology Officer with the E Group in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacead. Almacead is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacead. Find out more and see the university studies at almacead.com. That's Almaced.com.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A shouting match in the White House between President Trump, Vice President J.D. Vance, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky during an Oval Office meeting. The details and the audio coming up at a CBS News special report. The movements of a suspected serial rapist in St. Louis are traced back to Chicago. It's Entrepreneur Friday. We check back in with the founder and co-owner of a taco business who's made the transition to a permanent location. And if you're selling your home this spring, there are some simple things you can do to reduce time on the market and increase the price. Business, the markets are slightly higher. The Dow is up 11 points. The NASDAQ is up 9. The S&P 500 is up 2. We have 54 degrees right now in Chicago. Under partly sunny skies, it's 12:31.
CBS News special report. President Trump's meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky became very combative.
You got to be more thankful, because let me tell you, you don't have the cards. With us, you have the cards. But without us, you don't have any cards.
Zelensky was at the White House to sign the minerals deal.
But you're either going to make a deal or we're out.
The verbal sparring seemed to be over whether or not Zelensky was appreciative of the administration's plans. CBS correspondent Nancy Cordes at the White House.
The leaders are meeting behind closed doors right now. And after that, they're supposed to hold a news conference with the president standing side by side, two podiums with President Zelensky. And we're asking whether that news conference is still going to go forward after the spectacle that we just witnessed in the Oval Office.
President Trump has just posted he's determined Zelensky is not ready for peace if America is involved. He can come back, the president says, when he is ready. CBS News special report. I'm Cammie McCormick.
It's 12:32. Police in St. Louis County, Missouri have released a timeline for an accused rapist as they continue searching for more victims. 28-year-old Yaha Mali is charged with 13 felony counts, including rape, sodomy, and kidnapping. He allegedly met the victims through dating websites. Investigators say the suspect was in Chicago from January 12th to February 12th of 2022. Molly is being held in a $500,000 bond. It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are lower once again. We welcome in Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. The website horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like this sell-off that we saw about in the last hour or so coincides with that tense Oval Office meeting between President Trump, the vice president, and Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. So maybe some geopolitical turmoil appears to be back on the menu for investors and analysts.
It seems that's the case, and not just today, but over the last few days, where the market has started out with nice gains, but has lost them throughout the day. Typically after some announcement of a tariff or some other kind of political announcement. So, yes, the market is on a very short term basis here has been very vulnerable to kind of geopolitical events. And, we're also going into the weekend here. So it'll be interesting to see if, traders are comfortable holding positions going into a weekend where, there's likely to be some chaos coming out of D.C.
And on top of that, it's not only the end of the weekend, but the end of a month. And how do traders make positions based on the changing of the calendar, or do they?
Well, I think some traders might. I'm not sure that that's going to be too widespread, but you know, there are people kind of trying to position their portfolios. February wasn't a great month, certainly the last couple of weeks, and you know, they're trying to position portfolios for maybe a better start to March. But yeah, I think the weekend here is the big deal from a time deadline standpoint, as investors and traders specifically are kind of inclined maybe to take in their positions and not have too much exposure going into the weekend.
And then looking at, you know, you talk about just all the news coming out of Washington, and we knew this was going to happen. I think this was a hallmark of the first Trump administration, was a great deal of news, and you know, he was the ringmaster of a show that you have to watch. And if a show does not have entertainment, it does not have plot twists, if it doesn't have threats of tariffs then being taken off the table, people are not going to pay attention. But the markets do react to that. And at what point does the volatility based on things that are happening in Washington have a harmful effect on investors or push the market in one direction or another?
It's a great question. And we don't invest through the prism of politics. But that's not to say that things can't matter from a political standpoint. So there's three engines that really matter, the market, those being interest rates, inflation, and corporate profits. And, you know, what we tend to say is, listen, if these things are going to matter, if all this geopolitical chaos is going to matter to those three things, it will show up in the performance of the Dow Jones Industrial and Dow Jones Transportation Average through the prism of the Dow theory. And, you know, interestingly, yesterday, the Dow Jones Transportation Average, which is an extremely economically sensitive index, did go to a new intermediate low. So that is worth watching. It doesn't shift the primary trend yet in the Dow theory from bullish to bearish, but it is one piece of a signal that if, in fact, the Dow Industrials did close below their previous low of around 42,000, that would not bode well for the market. So we're starting to see maybe the first cracks in the market, i.e. the Dow Jones Transportation Average, being impacted by what's been going on now in Washington.
Now, before that meeting took place, it seemed like the markets liked what they saw in the PCE report, the Fed's inflation gauge, that even though it was still well above the target, inflation continued to cool off.
Yeah, that was good news. I think the other good news has been that, you know, for the most part, we're coming out of the earnings period, and the earnings have been pretty strong. And so, you know, that prop for the market being, you know, corporate profits is still firmly, I think, in the bullish camp. But, you know, it's the other factors. The exposure to tariffs, and that has really been kind of what the market has been really focusing on. And, you know, we'll get some clarity maybe next week if, in fact, we see things, you know, tariffs going on in Mexico and Canada, and we see an increase in the tariffs in China. I think the Mexico-Canada tariffs are really interesting because those can be particularly crippling on certain segments of the economy, such as the autos, for example. So I think the market's really weary about what's going to happen there and thus has been behaving the way it's been behaving.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, Entrepreneur Friday, making a mark in Chicago's competitive taco market.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and it's we're celebrating a Taco Friday with a familiar friend of this program, Taylor Mason, founder and co-owner of Taylor's Tacos on the west side of Chicago. Taylor, thank you for joining us today. I feel like we have been together through every stage of the Taylor's Tacos development, starting with the pop-up way back in 2018, which was inspired by the street food that you saw as a college student in Southern California.
Absolutely. I feel like we're the old friends that don't see each other for a while, but we check back in and we haven't missed a beat. But I feel like I've lived nine lives in between every time you talk to me.
I was going to say, every time you come on the show, there's a new accomplishment to tout or a story about a setback that you endured and overcame because you had the pop up and then the initial space was hit by a car and then you had to go through COVID and all of these different experiences, I think, has led to a very great saying from you, and that is, you know, entrepreneurship is not for the weak. You got to have the stomach for it. But if you can drive through it, no pun intended, I'm sorry, Taylor, but if you can go through it, if you can endure it, you come out stronger and smarter and potentially wealthier on the other side.
Absolutely. I'm trying. I need a million in small bills. So if anybody has it, please come and find me at 1512 West Taylor Street. That's where our taco shop is. But a lot has changed. I mean, you know, we really had to analyze, like you said, we've gone through everything from this COVID to post-COVID and now just the economy, just making it every day, taking it one day at a time is what it's all about. But our catering has always been who we are at the heart, bringing the community together one taco at a time. And now we're only open to the public one day a week, Taco Tuesdays. It's an event. Come on out to our taco shop. The other days of the week, we are catering. We're doing corporate catering. We're doing schools, hospitals, private, you name it. We're doing it because we love bringing the community together because that's what this is all about.
Now, at what point did you decide just to focus entirely on the catering side of the business and turn opening up into a one day a week event?
We made that change in September 24, and it was tough. You know, we had to have a lot of come to Jesus moments, like, are we making the right choice? Are people going to get it? But we knew that we had to do what was best for us and not turn into those old grumpy entrepreneurs. We do this because we love it, and we wanted to make sure that we maintain this. And when we wake up, we're doing what we do best and standing in our purpose, and that's catering and events.
But at the same time, that one day of the week that it's open, it is an event in and of itself. And do you notice
absolutely.
That when you're open to the public on that Taco Tuesday, I mean, do people show up and say, you know, geez, I'm glad you're open. You know, I never make a point to miss it. You know, I always want to be here. What are those Taco Tuesdays like when talking to your customers?
Absolutely. They look forward to it. We are open from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. and every moment we are serving during that time. It's really been great because we've been able to use this as an opportunity to highlight and collaborate with a lot of other businesses. You know, everybody's kind of going through it right now. So the best way is to call in. Don't call out. Bring everybody together. And that's what we've been doing. Last week we got to do an awesome mushroom, delicious chimichurri, pickled red onion taco with Taste of Brie. She has a restaurant over in Cicero, and she's doing amazing vegan meals. And just to be able to come together, put our little spin on it, make it delicious. People came from far and wide, and that's what we love to do. Next week, we're going to be highlighting in the start of Women's Month, Grandma Fanny's. We're passing out samples of her amazing products to everyone who orders with us. So that's what it's all about, and we're able to do that because we can focus, and we're not just figuring out how to keep the lights on for the restaurant every day of the week. The other days we can really do what we're passionate about, which is catering. So if you're having a party, whatever you're doing, you want to celebrate, you got to have Taylor's Tacos in the building because we're going to keep giving them something to talk about.
Talk very briefly, Taylor, about your relationship with customers, because the brick and mortar location has been open long enough, and I think you've been catering long enough to probably know who the regulars are and really, you know, get to know the people who patronize your business.
I mean, absolutely. We've sold almost 500,000 tacos to date. And so that's a lot of tacos, which means that's a lot of people eating tacos. And we have a community, we like to call it, a place where you can belong, where not only you can come and get delicious, amazing, well-crafted food, but also be a part of a taco family. So that's what it's all about. And I mean, I love it. I love it so much. And thank you for bringing me on to remind me, because sometimes you just got to stop and smell the roses, because it's hard. Running a business is the hardest thing I've ever decided to do, but I'm so glad that I get a chance to do it, and I'm grateful and honored to be able to share my craft with you.
Taylor Mason, founder and co-owner of Taylor's Tacos, near west side of Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still to come, tips on selling your home from an expert on the housing market.
It's cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
If you're selling a home, smart preparation is the key to attracting buyers and maximizing the amount you'll make. We welcome in Brian Wickert, president and owner of Acunet Mortgage in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Brian, thank you for joining us today. And it used to be, it seemed not too long ago, Brian, it seemed like the housing market was so tight that people were paying cash, they were waiving inspections, they were buying the house, even if it was, covered in, even if you were showing up on a Sunday morning and the house was still filthy, it was going off the market. The housing market was that hot. But if you are putting your house on the market, as spring is about to, is upon us, it certainly feels like it today, what are some quick things you can do to make sure that it exits the market sooner rather than later?
Excellent question, and I think it's a little bit more of a balanced market in Chicago. Publicly traded real estate brokerage Redfin has Chicago rated as a moderately competitive, a market where 15% of sellers had to drop their price in order to get an accepted offer, which is better than the national average, which Zillow reported at 23%. So I'm going to say the number one thing that you can do to make sure your home sells quickly and for top dollar is to not overprice it when you go out on the market. A lot of sellers think, hey, I'm going to ask for the moon and then buyers are going to make me an offer. That's just not the way it works anymore. So working with that experienced local real estate agent who can really help you see your property through the eyes of buyers, that's number one in my mind.
And then when it comes to choosing an agent, the end of the 3% commission also means you have to factor in one more data point in choosing a realtor, and that is compensation. So how do you navigate those waters, especially since they're so new?
Well, that is true. Since the NAR settled their class action lawsuit, it's not a bundled commission anymore. So you got a couple of things going on. All real estate commissions are negotiable. And I just read a survey where the average in the Chicago area that sellers are paying their listing agent is about 2.6%. But again, that's negotiable. What you also have to decide on the seller is, are you going to help the buyer out by paying their real estate commission? And I would say in your typical price ranges, that's something you're going to have to do because buyers just don't have that extra cash. And so you're going to see that when you get offers coming in, whether the buyer's asking you as the seller to pitch in towards their real estate commission, and that's running on average about 2.4%.
And then one thing you can do very quickly, I mean, before you get into that level of advanced math, is just to clean and declutter your home because you want it to look really nice in those staged photos that show up on Redfin and Zillow.
It's an HGTV world, Rob, and so that's absolutely number one. And you can get some tips from your listing agent. You got to clean it up. You got to declutter. I always like to say, pay attention to the front entrance to your home. You don't come in that way, typically, right? You come in through the garage. And so you got to look at that in the eyes of the buyer. That's called curb appeal. And doing simple stuff like maybe having somebody paint your front door, maybe even getting a new one, can really help that first impression. So you got to look good online. Consider using a professional stager. A lot of listing agents are certified stagers. That doesn't cost as much as people think, and then definitely get professional photography too, because how you look online determines how many showings you're going to get.
Brian Wickert, president and owner of Acunet Mortgage in Waukesha, Wisconsin, suburban Milwaukee. Thank you for joining us today.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.